So we're here to give you a panel overview of our work that we've been doing promoting Million Hearts at the state level and sort of in a systems change approach. So I'm going to start with Dr. Letitia Presley Cantrell to give us an overview.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Is there anybody here?
Good afternoon.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's good afternoon. It's lunchtime and my mind is like, I don't know, 6 a.m. Okay, so what I thought I'd do briefly, and this I told Elizabeth, this may feel kind of ignite-ish because I'm going to go really fast, but I want to do that in an attempt to give the programs an opportunity to talk about the work they've been doing. And so what I'm going to do today is just from the national perspective, we fund all of this work, and so I just wanted to share with you briefly where this sits in our national work and how that plays out. So just some background, as you know, heart disease and stroke is the leading cause of death in the United States, and there are about 800,000 deaths per year. And what we know is that for persons less than 65 years and old of age, those deaths are preventable. And especially for minorities, we are finding that those deaths are twice as preventable as they are for the majority population. And also, we find that this is a contributor to racial disparities in life expectancy. So we are seeing some graduated differences across race ethnicities compared to this. So I like to use this graphic because it gives us a sense of the types and the numbers of persons that are uncontrolled. And so what we say is there are about 36 million persons that have uncontrolled hypertension, and that equals to the state populations of Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. So that's quite an impressive number. Also, when we speak about uncontrolled, we also talk about a population of folks that are already in care that are unaware that they even have hypertension. And so what we know is about 82% of those folks that have hypertension that are in care that are unaware, they already have insurance. About 80% of them go to the doctor on a regular basis. And about 62% of those folks have gone at least twice a year. So we have quite a number of folks who are in care that have hypertension that have yet to be diagnosed. So I want to talk to you about our Million Hearts campaign, because this is the campaign that a lot of this work sits under. It's our Million Hearts initiative. And what that initiative is it started in 2011, and it's an initiative to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes or events. And it's co-led by the Centers for Disease Control and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So we each have different roles in this. Most of the funding that is on the street at the level that you would recognize it is put out by CDC. And so that's pretty much what we'll be discussing today, is some of those funding efforts. So what are the key components of Million Hearts? We focus on the ABCs, which is aspirin when necessary, blood pressure control, cholesterol, and then smoking cessation or smoking. We also use a considerable amount of tools in terms of health technology, and that can be working with EHRs and other HIT technology. The innovations in care delivery, we do a lot of that through our smoking cessation, our team-based care, and our extended health workers in terms of CHWs or pharmacists. So we know in order for us to keep the population healthy and to change the environment, we need to reduce the amount of smoking that we find in terms of the community. So we need to decrease the prevalence of that. We also need to decrease sodium in the diet. And so we're working actively with our communities to decrease and to talk about sodium reduction. And we also need to eliminate trans fat in order for our communities to be healthier. So here you see the portfolio of what we fund in the Division for Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention at CDC. Million Hearts, as you see, is central to that funding. We have quite a number of initiatives. This portfolio ranges somewhere around about $150 million we have out in the field to work in these particular areas. Where the programs sit today that you'll be hearing about will be in the State Public Health Actions 1305 and 1422, because at CDC, if we don't give it a number, it doesn't exist. And so you'll hear folks talk about 1305 and 1422. But this portfolio helps us to increase the investment around the heart disease and stroke programs that are out in the community. So this map, and I like to use this map, it's just for you to see basically what the country looks like through our heart disease and stroke funding. So for that $100+ million, this is what it looks like on a national level. You know, some of you can recognize your states. The legend may be a little hard to read, but this is also on our website. For today's presentations, wherever you see that heart, that means that it is part of our Million Hearts branded funding. And what that means is all of the funding at CDC that we have aligns and works towards decreasing those going toward those 1 million events in heart disease and stroke. And so where you see those hearts, we have some funding that we dedicated and just branded Million Hearts. But all of our funding actually works toward our Million Hearts work. So the way we get this work done is we have a four-domain approach. The first domain is epi and surveillance. The second is environmental policies and approaches. The third is the health systems interventions. And the fourth is our community clinical linkage intervention, where we actually link our community and clinical services back into our clinical decision support area. So for this particular work, we are focused in domain three, and that is this domain. And in this domain, our strategies are for quality improvement, which is using the HIT, including EHRs. We're reporting standardized clinical quality measures such as NQF-18, NQF-59. We also use team-based care in health systems, so we are working through an integrated health systems approach. And then we also work in domain four. And domain four is where we have our community clinical work, and that work is where we use non-physician persons to actually help with and extend the healthcare beyond the physician's office. So this is a very busy infographic, but it explains a very complex funding model that we have now called 1305. It is four chronic disease areas that have come together. So it is physical activity and obesity, school health, heart disease and stroke, and then diabetes. And all four of those categorical programs have been put together under one funding stream in excess of about $100 million to work together to leverage the amount of work that's going on across activities and for us to find some synergies across that work. So what we did learn from this very briefly is when you're leveraging and finding synergies, you can actually sometimes create more work to do that. But we are actually finding that that is happening. In 1422, which is the other foundational work that is going on in the states, this work is funded only by heart disease and stroke prevention. That was about $70 million put into this work to look at what we call the dual approach. Typically in public health, we have a classic approach where we kind of do a population-based approach, but in this work, we looked at targeted universalism and use that theoretical framework as our basis, and we have a dual approach where we are looking at a population-wide approach as well as a targeted approach. The difference between this funding initiative and the one that I just showed you in 1305 is that this funding is going from the state all the way down to the community level, so the states will be working directly with communities in this area. So when we thought about who could help us to launch this work and where should we be, ASTO was a natural partner for us, and so we contacted ASTO and we said, can you help us get some of this work done? It's quite an enormous amount of work in a short period of time, and they were gracious enough to say, we'll be able to work with you. So the ASTO group, ASTO, the health officers, state and territorial health officers, are working with each of our state programs that has been funded to do this extra work. And the extra work is that in addition to the 1305 funding I showed you, in addition to our 1422 funding, there were certain states that received supplemental funds, these branded mental hearts funds, that are going to help them to accelerate the work that they're already doing in the state. So when we look at this ASTO funding, we call it an accelerant. I called it similar to kind of like kindling, putting kindling on a fire to accelerate that work. And you'll be happy to see from our state presentations just what a little bit more of infused dollars in a certain categorical area can do in terms of our work. So we do know that it takes a team to do this. So with the states, ASTO and CDC as the primary funder for this work, we've come together with what we know is a great model in the Learning Collaborative. You'll hear more about that. And we do know that it will take all of us working across the country, and we do work internationally also, but you'll see the domestic side of this work today. But it does take teamwork and a vision for us to be able to get this done. And having said that, with all of the things that are going on, with everything that we're doing, we know that with all of the funding we have, with all of the teams that are coming together, that we're going to be one step closer to getting more people into care that have hypertension and to bring them under control. So Dr. Freeman says that smoking is public health enemy number two, and hypertension is public health enemy number, is number one, and hypertension is number two. I guess I said it the way I wanted it to be, huh? But anyway, so he says every day we have to roll up our sleeves and make blood pressure control a priority every day with every patient at every doctor's visit. And that is never more true, and especially for some of our racial and ethnic populations that are disproportionately affected by hypertension, and will have more events and will be more debilitated as a result of the after effects of these events. So I don't want to hold you more, but I thought that would kind of give you a good foundation for where we are with the funding, where we are nationally. And so I'm going to turn it over to Elizabeth to now talk about the ASTO part of this venture, and then we'll go on to the further presentations.
Okay.
Great. So ASTO, oops, there you go. So how many of you heard of ASTO before? Yes? Great, so I don't have to get into too much detail. We serve the state health leadership in every single state and territory and freely associated states. I said that correctly, right? Thank you. Because I'm learning as I came to ASTO that we have freely associated states. I did not know that, and so now, which is why you see the blue dots out in the Pacific, which Carl gets to go to actually in 3 days. We also have affiliates that we work with, similar to a state health agency. We have AMCHIP and NACDD, our great partners over there, CSTE, all sorts of folks that we also, public health nutrition directors that we engage and work with on a month, everyday basis in many cases. So as Letitia very aptly described, we do have a, our project goal is to improve hypertension control and achieve the National Million Hearts goals, identified in both partnerships and cross-sector relationships to control hypertension. So while they said every doctor's visit, patients going to every doctor's visit, it takes a whole community to bring that person to the doctor. We recognize it's not just the provider alone that's going to help bring them under control. It's got to take a community and systems-wide approach. And that's why we have multiple different types of partners at the table. We test these models for collaboration between public health and healthcare, utilize the quality improvement process to affect practice and policy at all levels of the system, and focus on systems sustainability and spread. The percentage of patients 18 to 85 years of age is the focus, is so the NQF-18, to control those adults that are in that age range and bring them under blood pressure control, which is usually identified as 140 over 90. Though that may change, we realize that there's different guidelines that got released in the past year, and so there's a discussion about that. We've been really fortunate to partner with CDC for the past 3 years. So as you can see, we have a first round of states that were in blue. There were 10 of them that worked with us. In the second year in green, there were another 6, including Palau. And then this year, there were 5 additional states that we worked with. So in total, we've worked with 22 states around this collaborative approach. With our amazing partners, who I think are here today, some of them, the American Heart Association, the American Health Insurance Plans, Association of Public Health Nurses, Association of Community Health Centers, Association for Chronic Disease Directors, county and city health officials, and the National Forum for Heart Disease and Stroke, as well as Medicaid directors in the YMCA of USA. We are really fortunate to have these partners also engage with us. We realize it's that complementary approach that will get a patient into that doctor's visit for control. The clinical medicine, community health, public health, and population health all together. We do have a sort of a systems platform strategy approach, which I'll kind of go through here for a second. So the Million Hearts process is not really a program. A lot of times people think, oh, it's a project, it's a, you know, this initiative, but it's not. It's a systems change. And if, for anyone who's worked at a state or a local level where you're trying to affect a long-term sustainable change, you recognize that there's different pieces of the puzzle. It's not going to just be a policy change alone. It's not going to just be an evidence-based practice on its own or a community-level resource. You're going to have tons of resources that you can put into a community, but you have to have all of these little things working behind the scenes together. Financing of these initiatives, the sectors and partners that you have together, as well as data-driven action. And with all of that, you help and encourage open communication across the state system. So that goes from the local level all the way to the state with clear leadership and vision. If you do not have all of these little pieces, it is not a sustainable project. And that's really what we're trying to look at, is a sustainable systems change. And that's really the focus. So we really drive and focus all of our work on all of these different levers. And I'm sure Jason, who just joined us, can tell you, we talk about these levers all the time. So with the process, we utilize an adaptation of the AHI Breakthrough Series model. So the Institute for Healthcare Improvement has the rapid cycle, PDSA cycles that they do, where you test very quickly and you turn around and change it. Where in public health, sometimes we would do one PDSA cycle a year. The idea is to do multiple ones. We had 4 learning sessions, 1 virtual, 1 in person with the stakeholders, as well as 2 additional where we actually had multiple states meeting. So for our first year, we had 10 states meeting on the exact same day, where 10 staff would go out into the community, into these states, and then we would connect them virtually. So they were still sharing, but at the same time, you were able to amplify that by having multiple stakeholders participating in that sharing process. So that was very important. We had monthly calls, monthly PDSA cycle reports, with the goal of spread. So we would start with 3 counties, but the idea is to ramp up to cover the entire state. In our first year alone, and I know Carl's going to go into a little bit more detail about our evaluation, we had more than 430 different tests done, with 12 multi-state meetings, 84 different virtual convenings, more than 290 partners. And this was the exciting part for us, because that was bringing payers together. We actually ended up writing an entire brief on the role of payers in hypertension, because so often people think, I'm going to go to the payer for funding. But in fact, payers are an important partner in other areas, such as performance measures or data. So there's lots of different things you can utilize and work with as a public health with your payers that does not have to be about funding alone. Hospital systems, quality improvement organizations, FQHCs, community partners, paramedic programs, medical reserve corps, and other non-traditional partners. It was a really exciting opportunity to be able to work with these non-traditional partners. From the 5 states alone, we were able to identify 5,632 individuals with hypertension, referred over 2,000 of those individuals to services, and 201 individuals with hypertension reduced their blood pressure, and 154 achieved blood pressure control. That's just from 5 states alone. But from the larger group, we had a project reach of over 275,000 people with a potential reach of over 3 million. And it was a true pleasure and an honor, and that's why we're going to focus today on the 2 states that we wanted to talk about. So I'm going to try to get through the next part. And again, reminding you, all of this happened because it was about these levers that we focused on. So around public health protocols, which is sort of those evidence-based programs, clinical practices, it was really focusing on proper blood pressure measurement, diagnosing hypertension among the undiagnosed, controlling hypertension among diagnosed patients, care coordination teams and counseling, tracking follow-up appointments, community screening and referral, home blood pressure monitoring, and medication management and adherence. So those were some of the key things that these states initially worked on related to that. One of the things we saw was in Summit County, as part of the clinical protocol, was the engagement in which the Summit County Public Health Department worked very closely with their primary care physicians in their state and were in their community. They trained a practice to utilize public health and care coordination services, and then with the care practices, developed protocols for the actual Summit County Public Health Department to follow up on missed appointments. And at that point, they would say, well, why did you miss the appointment? How can we help you get to your appointment? Again, it's about helping people get to the care that they need. So in this case, Ohio would sit there and connect them to transportation services. If their lights were out, They would tell them how to get scholarships in order to support them in their work. So the idea is public health plays a very important social determinants role and an opportunity to connect them to the resources in their community. Data use and coordination, we're improving the clinical decision-making process. So I think you'll hear a little bit more from DC and New York about their hypertension registries, provider and patient dashboards, utilizing electronic health records to flag those high blood pressures and diagnoses, but at the population level, informing those policies and practices, such as hospital discharge and ER data. How do you utilize that data to actually make decisions about your community? All payer claims data, public and private data, so that would be utilizing how can you take claims data, which in some cases are 3 months old to a year old, but it's less old than our surveillance data, which can sometimes be 2 years old. So it's really trying to use more real-time to near-time data. And then using NQF-18 as a quality metric or a health measurement. So how can you help support those practices? But then, this is the thing that was really neat, is across all of these systems to have a common measure so that everyone was moving toward a common goal rather than some cases, some people are like, oh, we think 130 over 40, or this person's going to do, well, I think they seem fine as long as they're 160 over 39. But it made it common to everybody. Okay, this is what our measurement is together, and as a community, this is how our hypertension community workflow is going to look like. And then heat maps to identify burden of hypertension. One really good example is in Illinois. They were able to utilize hospital discharge data to inform their targeted community-based blood pressure screening referral systems. So you can see here, they are able to show, okay, this is where in our zip code where you saw the highest impact of incidence rate per 100,000. And so then they would work in that community specifically in order to say, okay, what can we do to get parish nurses screening and referring back into primary care? How can we get different programs to be working together so that the clinician and all the community resources are targeted in this one area? Program and community resources, again, building internal capacity for training and staff on protocols and data sources. So the idea for in some states, for instance, is the public health agency would help spread and disseminate best practices so that, again, it was common across all the providers in the state. Linking clinical practices with local public health departments like care coordination teams, working with faith-based organizations on screening and referral loops, and it wasn't just about handing a piece of paper to a patient. It was about how do we help the patient by contacting the provider for them. How can we help connect them electronically, or if our electronic health records or our health information systems were not working properly, what can we do in the short term while we wait for those HIEs to come on board? Creating community screening sites or referral protocols with wallet cards. Again, the idea is not to just do a screening, but it's, okay, can I now call your provider for you to help set up an appointment? Because that's the step we have to take. Too many people were dying because they were not in control. So communities were taking action to really remove the patient from the only portal of communication. And that's referral tracking systems like in North Dakota and Virginia. Financing protocols was really exciting to see how the states really explored this. Coordinating with public-private payer organizations, with FQHCs and QIOs, really kind of looking at different payment models, performance measure models, collaborating with payers to develop and use an all-claims database. So it's really trying to work with payers to say, you have more recent data than us. How can we use that together? Support the practices and the community to understand that. Increasing use of billing code, and I know that Jason can talk about that probably. Developing a pay-for-performance model and studying return on investment. So that was one area in Oklahoma where the partnership was between public health, community pharmacists, as well as providers, to share in a bonus when they reached helped the patient reach goal. So those were just different opportunities where states were trying out and exploring different ways in which to look at payment models for sustainability. And then obviously, many of them, all of them, were focusing on reimbursement for community health workers. But as I was reminded last week on a site visit, community health workers alone will not solve this problem. Community health workers are a component of a larger systems change. So you really have to think about it from the perspective of they're a piece of the puzzle, but they are not the only piece of the puzzle. And a lot of attention is being focused on, well, the community health worker will save it. Not necessarily. What we're hearing back is You have to understand what's the screening, what's the referral, where's the community health worker sit, what's the education and background. So there's a lot of complexity in the community health worker. And as you can see probably in your own state and community, junior colleges are now creating their own certification programs. There's different ways in which people are getting certified. So it's definitely one we've learned a lot about. Overall learning for us is that, and again, as I get ready, and Carl's going to talk more about the data and our evaluation approach, but our systems approach tested QI methodology utilizing PDSA cycles. It was an effective tool. And state teams and their partners needed those training, but they really found this to be an effective way for them to help support their clinical partners, because clinical partners move much faster than public health does. And so this was a project that helped them say, okay, we have 9 months. We're going to work together, and in this 9 months, let's see what we can do. And that really made clinical partners very happy. Leadership buy-in, we had state health officials at every table helping to really guide the vision and make sure that it hooked and connected to the larger systems change like SIMS or different health transformation going on. And partnerships developed through this collaborative chance enhance the sustainability and system spread. And that was bringing those partners in as soon as possible was critical for them. And then states have been continuing to apply those lessons learned to alter approaches and leverages of other funding streams at all those different levels. So we actually have all, for every single state that we work with, we part of their final report is to give us every resource, every tool that they used, every communication method that they used. So if you go to our Ask a Million Reps website, you can see our tools for change broken out by our different categories and those levers, whether it be community linkages, data-driven action, evidence-based programs, financing and policy, it's all there, including state examples and resources by just clicking on every state. So I'm going to stop there.